Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Now, 51551 on the text, and we're going to have a very important conversation now, but it is a sensitive one, so bear that in mind, because the research basically shows that when someone suffers sexual assault, they turn to a friend first, particularly the young people. So we thought it was important to equip people, young and old, for that conversation so that they know how to respond appropriately. And Padraig McNeela also feels the same way. He's the head of the School of Psychology in the University of Galway. He's here in studio to talk about this campaign he's launching. Good morning, Padraig.
Hi, Oliver. How are you?
It's called Start Here, and this is part of the Active Consent Programme. And you've been part of this consent campaign in Galway, haven't you, for quite a long time?
Yeah.
You must have noticed changes in that conversation in 10 years.
Yeah, like that's been my professional life now for 12 years. I'm an academic in Galway, and we set up the Active Consent Programme. What we really want to do there is like prevention, empowering healthy relationships.
Yeah.
But there's a term we use, which is culture change, which means that we need to look at all ways in which sexual violence and harassment can affect people in a school, a college, further education, etc. And that brings us to disclosure, right? So that brings us to when people have experienced sexual assault or harassment and they're wondering, who can I talk to? And
this is a huge step for them, isn't
it?
Because they're agonizing over whether they tell anyone something's happened to them.
Absolutely.
And they generally go to?
Yeah, well, they generally go to a friend. And this is also the case for adults as well. So whether you're a parent, whether you're a student, a professional, a teacher or whatever, there's a role for you to start here. So that's why we've got together with Galway Rape Crisis Centre and AMLAE, you know, USI as was, to craft out some basic advice like do's and don'ts for when somebody does approach you and want to talk to you about that.
You sort of point out that for the victim, this is a huge moment for them. It kind of determines what they do next, doesn't it? How their friend responds.
Yeah. I mean, what we want to do is avoid having people having to talk repeatedly about this issue. It's re-traumatizing to do that. We know people will often have to repeat the story many times if they choose to report to the guards or an official complaint service. So the best thing that we can do is just establish a nice space for somebody to slow down, gather their thoughts. In the first conversation, Oliver, I think people are even processing what did happen. It's a way of talking, getting the words out there so that they can work out, what is my story? Like, what did happen? You know, with trauma, we can often have patchy memories, disjointed memories. And so you're kind of like a sounding board. Your job is really just to be there, to listen to the person, to believe them, and also to kind of keep them in the present moment, you know, to say, what can I do? How can I help you now? And to avoid getting into our own feelings, like men maybe in particular, I might feel angry if you tell me something, I might want to do something to help you.
That'll be a very common one.
Yeah. And or again, I might just get caught up in my whole emotion of caring, you know, and it's about my feelings. So we really just need to kind of keep people focused with simple questions. What can I do? How can I help? What would you like to tell me? And avoid really like a big investigation. You know, I'm kind of thinking more of the parents now, but like, you know, why did you go over there? Why did you do that? How much did you have to drink?
That's the worst, isn't
it? We don't want to go down that road. We really just want to be present with the person.
That's the kind of, it's your fault, which they kind of already feel in the shame, don't they?
They certainly can. So we want to avoid kind of reacting with our own agenda and our own emotions. Avoid as well.
Is the agenda there sort of a, I don't want this to be real, therefore I'll kind of talk it down?
From the parent point of view, it's really so hard for somebody to come to terms with as a parent, okay?
Denial, kind of.
Yeah, but you know yourself as a parent, you are one of the strongest allies for your child.
What does the research, or do you have research on what people generally say? What is the most common response when a friend hears that their friend has been sexually attacked?
Well, yeah, the research that we've done, Oliver, like I've had the opportunity to read hundreds of written in kind of transcripts of people who've had that experience. And we often do see that kind of, you got to go to the guards. Okay, now, SATU, you know, the sexual assault treatment units, they have a role to play in the immediate aftermath of an assault. But if we're talking about days later, you know, that kind of, we need to do something. We have to react. You know, we need to bring this forward. We need to have a confrontation. You know, we need to call it out. That's not necessarily what we're looking for. We want to bring it back to those really simple communication principles I mentioned: empathy, caring, space, and time.
That's more important than trying to set up a justice campaign.
Absolutely. And, you know, the whole process of deciding, will I make a complaint? Will I seek redress? That's something that the person really needs to have as their own choice, because their power has been taken through the assault that they've experienced. And there's a lot for people to think about as to whether they want to kind of go into a formal complaints process. In our colleges, we're not that good at having an intermediate process. You know, we're immediately getting people into a formal process. So this is about us being a human, us being a teacher, a colleague, a parent, a friend who can just be there with the person on a basic human level.
You deal with young people a lot. What happens if, you know, a victim maybe telling the story days, weeks, months, perhaps even years later, is telling their friend and they're both drunk on the occasion, and the following day they obviously both wake up. Maybe the friend might ring, the victim might ring the friend and say, look, forget I said anything. Or the friend is wondering, should I say something to that person they were talking when they were drunk? What do you do in those situations?
I think you really just leave the door open, and just like as your rule of thumb should be, let that victim or survivor, you know, lead the way insofar as how they want to go back to it. And also, you don't know what else that's triggered for the person. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're looking up the Rape Crisis Helpline. Maybe it's provoking them to kind of talk to somebody else, maybe looking at other sources of material. And basically, you've done your job in being there for the person. You're not there to solve the problem. You're there really just to lend a helping hand.
There's a problem with men. They don't tend to tell anyone, do they?
Well, like over half of men that we've found do tell another person, but that's substantially lower than for women. And we also see it in the consent workshops that we do as part of the Active Consent campaign. When it comes to when the man is the victim, there can be a lot of kind of pushback against, like, why didn't he do something? Why didn't he walk out of the room? Like, wasn't he happy to have intimacy with this other person? And we don't so much see that kind of stereotype applied for women. It's easier for us to see kind of women as victims, if you like.
Yeah.
And certainly men can sometimes feel silenced. These are a number of the comments that we get back as well. Is there a place for us as men in that discussion? And I think that there is, for you as a victim, if you're a man, to tell another person, and also for us as men to be there and, you know, offer that communication and help to somebody else.
Well, Padraig, it's kind of, it's fairly easy, isn't it? The step, the do's and don'ts are, it's empathy first, isn't it?
Well,
rage is no good.
Yeah, look, very few of us have had any guidance in this area, Oliver. So we want you to like and follow Active Consent. You'll see a lot of the information from the campaign. Want you to go to Consent Hub, which is our campaign website. And it's start here. This is only going to take you a few minutes to process this. There's other material there. If you've got 40 minutes, you can take our e-learning platform on what is sexual violence and consent.
If you want to go deep into it, but really, it's kind of easy enough, isn't it? Sadly, most of us will hear these stories at some point in our lives, and we won't know how to respond.
That's right. Yeah.
So all the details. It's Active Consent is the campaign everywhere: Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Blue Sky at Active Consent. And the website again is consenthub.ie, and you'll find the start here tools and all that. Padraig McNeely, thank you so much for this.
Thank you.
We'll be back after these.
From the North Tech Studio, followed by your message to 80889.